start recording. It's the red button. It lights up and then away we go. Sasha, we're here with Sherman Thomas. I'm sorry. I didn't feel sort of comfortable going for the full thing here. But first, Sasha, can you sort of lay it before us why this conversation is important?
Yeah, why I am a real fan of Dilla, that is because he makes these small stories about cities alive. And that's the, I think that we can better understand why we are here right now. If we know the small stories of how our cities are founded, but also how they have lived through time, because it's a living identity, a city. And things that we're figuring out right now and think, oh, that's brand new. Well, usually it isn't. And Amsterdam is full of these small stories. And I love to learn more about the small stories of Chicago that built it, the foundation of Chicago. And thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thank you. Honored.
Thank you for having me.
Really please, can you introduce yourself for our listeners?
Yes, my name is Sherman Dilla Thomas. Most people refer to me as Dilla. I'm a urban historian from Chicago. My day job is I'm an area operator for our light utility company. So it's just a fancy way of saying I'm a high voltage electrician.
Right.
And then aside from that, I lead neighborhood tours. I'm a proud dad and a husband.
Oh, wow. Wow, off to a good start. So can you explain the Dilla for me?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, right? So I don't know how it is here in Amsterdam, but in Chicago, there's this strip called Western Avenue where all the used car dealers are. And you know, once you give them your money, you're going to drive away with a piece of junk. But as soon as you turn 18, you save your money and you go do it anyway. And so my mom said I reminded her of those car dealers because I could sell her anything, right? And so she started calling me Sherm Dilla. And then the Sherm dropped, you know, as I got older.
Right. But that sounds like a compliment, though.
Yeah. I take it as one now. I didn't as a kid, right? She said I could just convince her to spend money on crap, you know, things that would not retain value or break easier. So she said I was her like a used car dealer.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, but it's also a little bit how you put... Well, what do you say? Just small stories on TikTok. Guys think it's amazing that you use TikTok for this. How'd you came up with it?
I can't take any credit for that. It's my daughter. She's 9 now, but at the time she was 8 and she wanted to get on TikTok and do those dances. We did one and it got like maybe 100 views. So she was sad because it didn't perform well. I told her, let me feed you some Chicago history stories. I was going to write it in like 9-year-old speech. And I thought that it would go viral if she read it. And she said that history was boring. So I did it to encourage her. And I just kept doing them.
Right. And I take it you were born and raised in Chicago?
Yes. The entirety of my life, born and raised on the south side of Chicago. I went I left the city to go away to college.
Right.
But then I came back home and never left. My father was a Chicago policeman for 32 years. My mom is from Chicago. So it's really, really ingrained in me.
Yeah. And we talk about this often. It's sort of the ownership that you feel like you are sort of rooted in a city and it's not a place where you just drop by and leave again in a couple of years, but you sort of take the ownership of it. That must resonate with you.
I'm so jealous of people who can leave. I'm meeting all these amazing people in Amsterdam who have left places, right, to come here for better opportunities or just came where their career led them. And I can't imagine anything making me leave Chicago permanently. Like, right, I'll travel, I'll go work, but that's always going to be my home. And I think I'm needed there. Because I said it today, if a person knows the story, if a person is familiar with the history of an area, then they instantly respect it.
Exactly.
There's a bit of disrespect in certain sections of Chicago going on, and I think it's because they're not aware of the rich heritage that their feet are literally standing on.
Yeah.
I'm a bit jealous of the way you take it. I had the opportunity to make a book about Amsterdam in 2007. And well, with a small editorial team, we interviewed over 500 people with their small stories of Amsterdam. And the book is called Invisible Amsterdam. So everything that you can't see, actually. I think it's so important because then you get the idea about, well, it's almost like this ant bulb.
Yep.
Everything is working together with each other. And that's creating the city as a living organism or an ecosystem.
Yeah.
And well, I've never been to Chicago, but always when I think about Chicago, I think right away to Michael Jordan, who was a very famous, of course, in the world. And then in Amsterdam, we have Johan Cruyff. Mm. And I both think they were also very musician cities with a cultural heritage. And what do you think that city design is making the heart of our cities? Does it have any correlation?
Oh, there's so much correlation between Amsterdam and Chicago. Like you said, our city is designed, right? We have a Chicago plan of 1909 that laid out the street grid, that laid out the arteries and where the train line should go, that version of urban planning. And as I understand it, so was Amsterdam. But then we also have an issue of reputation, right? So here's Amsterdam, this amazing historic, you know, I just saw a house that was there in the 1600s, for God's sake. But the second I mentioned Amsterdam to all my friends, was the first thing they say, right? Oh, go to Red Light Cafe, go to Red Light District, or go to a cafe. And I'm not even from here, and I was a little offended. I said, brother, you know, one, pretty much every amazing cinematic movie ever has been shot there, right? Go see those places. Go see the various museums. I love that Amsterdam is progressive in that manner, right? Because arresting people over prostitution is ridiculous, but that's not what that city is. And then when people talk about Chicago, right, if they're not talking about Michael Jordan, they're mentioning crime.
Right,
and that's not what our city is. And so those comparisons, yes, for sure. But then I just heard about Boom Chicago, right?
Yeah.
And our love for improv, right? We're very much intertwined. I believe the arts help our urban planning, right? When they're implemented together.
Right, right. Can you elaborate on that?
So when we're planning out new neighborhoods or investments or going to change some road work, it's important to keep the arts in mind. Leave space for the aesthetics that people are going to see when they come to your new development, right? It's not enough to think about, you know, creating affordable housing for people, but what are they going to see when they're in those housing?
Right.
Are you going to have installations of public art, right? Is your public housing going to come with resources, right? Micro libraries or micro bookstores that are thought about as you're thinking about, you know, not just how many bodies or apartments you're going to put in the space and how much money you're going to make, but how are the people going to feel about that space?
How does it touch the hearts?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. When I think of Chicago, actually, also very superficial, so you know, I hope you forgive my ignorance, but I think of that story of raising the city.
Yes.
I mean, it was, I mean, you should tell this, but it's sort of almost as like you can do anything in a city if you can just raise it.
Oh my goodness.
Not physically.
Yeah. I not only do I tell those stories, this is a part of what I do because people in Chicago don't know that. And so you may live in a house that requires you to walk 7 stairs down to go in your front door. And what that is that's a property that could not afford to lift themselves up
when
we were installing sewers. But it's people who live there, they live their neighbor is at street grade, but their house is below street grade. And they never knew why, right? But the answer is we had to lift the city to install sewers. And even how they did it speaks to community because, in the 1800s, they didn't have all the mechanical equipment and hydraulic jacks that we have today. They had the hand manual jacks. And what happened is 700 guys around a building at the beat of a drum, right? He beat the drum and you turn.
Really?
Turn and you're inching by centimeters, lifting the city. They said that people would stay in the hotel and they would not know that they were being lifted. And then when they left out, it, you know, 8 hours later, they'd be 6 feet off the ground. Right? They did not know. But the communication it took to get them to, because if somebody's off, then the people are going to feel the lift. But if everybody's doing it at the same time, really, really incrementally, right, you're able to raise in the people didn't even notice that. Right.
So, very small earth. earthquakes.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Just writing.
But what are the current things within Chicago that need raising?
That's an amazing way to put it. And there's a lot going on. So when we're becoming way more sustainable about how we're treating Lake Michigan, which is our drinking water, in Chicago, it's one of the most sustainable fresh waters sources in all of America. And that's because they're being very thoughtful, right, about how they refine it, the water rec centers, the amount of pollution that they allow to even come close to it, right? They're very forward thinking about that. And I think that that's helping. A problem we're having now, though, is that we're kind of focused commercial development in one area, mm-hmm. right? And I think the other areas need to be lifted up. There's a place in Chicago called the West Side of Chicago. And it has not had one single new residential building placed there since Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Whoa.
Right? That's 1968. They have not built anything new in this particular area since then. I think that space needs to be lifted up.
Yeah.
Is that a bit of a problem? Like, I think you call it redlining.
Yes. So redlining simply means in Chicago, in America, that it's a place that's not going to receive governmentally backed loans. So if you apply for a mortgage, then you get it. The government will back it. So if something happens to you, the bank knows that they're going to get their mortgage. There are certain areas, well, supposedly not anymore, but there were certain areas, the West Side being one, that was redlined, meaning that your mortgages would not be governmentally backed. But that doesn't mean that people didn't give mortgages. They just gave really shady ones, so ones that were not reputable.
Right.
Because where there isn't reputable business, that doesn't mean that they're not going to be any business. That means that someone who is irreputable or someone who has bad intentions is going to come in and make money where they can. And that a lot of that happened on the West Side, right? You would think you're paying into a reputable homeowner's insurance. And then when your house catches fire, you try to file that claim, you find out real soon that they had no intentions on ever paying a claim. They filed bankruptcy and they closed their company, and you can either spend the money trying to find them or you can spend the money trying to fix your house. And a lot of that went on.
Yeah. That's craziness, because that inserted a spiral of negativism.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because once you do that to one piece of property on the block, we bring the value down for the rest of the block. And in Chicago, right, the property value is what they base the taxes on. Mm-hmm. And then if an area is not receiving enough taxes, then the schools are the first to suffer.
Yeah.
Right. And then a place that doesn't have hope in its schools is a doomed place.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what it is. It's all about also a new narrative of hope, of course. For this kind of neighborhood. And I think that what you're doing on TikTok is creating a bit of hope too, that we can always come up again.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Thank you for saying that, because that's what inspires me. It's the triumph out of bad situations. It's being born in an area that had redlining, where your family could not move and better themselves. And yet, despite of that, right, you still gave everything you have to become something special, like a Richard Hunt, who I was discussing today, one of the first African-Americans to have his artwork in the New York Museum of Contemporary Art. And he did that as a high schooler, right? Coming from a very marginalized place. I've been listening to the celebration of gospel music, as I understand in England and other places, it's Black History Month. Well, gospel music comes from the South Side of Chicago, right? Mahalia Jackson and Thomas Dorsey invented that genre. And so, pointing that out to people, right? Yeah. You're more than just what the national media says about you, or maybe even more than what you see walking down your street, right? But in these same spaces, something has happened that changed the world. And it doesn't matter what your religion is or who you pray to. If you're having a great day and you hear a good gospel song, it makes your day that much better, right? But if you're sad and you hear the right gospel song, even if you don't pray to Jesus, whomever you pray to, if you're sad and a good gospel song comes, a precious Lord comes on, it's going to make you feel better.
Yeah. I fully agree. I mean, we got to come back to the TikTok as a platform. So you use that. And do you do this just because you described this at the start of our conversation with your daughter, and to publish things through TikTok, and she would read the stories. I can just imagine her sitting there. But is that something you do from passion, or is it, has it turned into something that is, that is an assignment by the city?
It's assigned now, and I don't like it. I enjoy it because I've done probably maybe 200 TikToks. Stories, and the first 100, 120 were the ones that I wanted, right? Whatever. Right. Sometimes I would be researching one story and then something else would spark me on the same page, right? If it's a archival newspaper, or if I was reading a student's dissertation and they made mention of something else, you know, maybe that became the story that I want to tell now. And now I got to spend time researching that. So nowadays, yes, you know, people want city institutions will say, hey, can you tell the history of our you know, school or whatever on your TikTok? It feels like work, right? Because then they want it by a certain day. Then they want to review it. And, well, can you say this or can you do that?
But still, those first 120, and I'm sure you put your heart in the rest of them as well. But why is it important for you to sort of bring that message in?
You got to meet people where they are. I'm sure you guys understand news is catching up to social media, right? And I think that's the reason why certain people are able to target true journalism as fake news or whatever you want to call it. But because news institutions were slow to social media. Right. And all I'm doing is using the newest tool available for me. When Frederick Douglass or Ida B. Wells was advocating against for abolition and for the freedom of African Americans and blacks worldwide, they used the newest tools. Right. They used the newspaper was the newest tool, or the record. Right. Billie Holiday singing, you know, different music. Right. Those are the newest tools available. And so right now what we have available to us is TikTok, and every kid on earth almost has a phone in there. They're going to be on TikTok, and I don't think they're all are going to love a history video, but someone's going to see something that they could connect to, or they see themselves in a video. They're going to hear a story. Maybe they wanted to be a painter, and now I'm talking about painters, right? That'll inspire them. I'm just trying to meet them where they are, because we're just all getting old.
Can I just ask, because just from a medium perspective, you only have so much space to share your message. So are you just highlight something and try to draw your listeners in? Is that what you do?
That's my goal. I want you to go on a rabbit hole.
Right.
After you heard the TikTok. I do want to inform you, though, and that's the challenge. How can I be as informative as I can in 60 seconds? A lot of times I'm sad at what I didn't get to say, because sometimes there's certain nuances. But nowadays, like, I'm taking it as a challenge. I don't want to sound like braggadocious, but like when I feel like I've gotten a lot of information in 60 seconds, man, I like slam stuff down. I walk away hyped up like I've scored 50 points or something. Where all of our attention spans are shrinking.
Yeah. You know? Go ahead.
No, I think really, I watched some of your TikToks. I was thinking, well, I'm going to do a city tour on bike to Chicago and then visit. And
every single TikTok.
Nice if you have a QR code and then you see
I'm
all the QR.
I'm working on that. So I do the neighborhood. We do a bus tour and people get on the bus and I take them to a lot of stuff that I talk about on TikTok. I take people to see on a bus tour.
Oh, okay. That's not recyclable.
So that's a problem with city planning. Chicago was a city planned for the vehicle cars, and it's hurting us now because car dependency. But then at the same time, we're trying to shrink our carbon footprint. Access to public transportation is a little harder in certain spaces, and so they're dependent on a car. But having a car in those spaces has raised the asthma rate in those spaces. It's shortened the life expectancy in those spaces. So it's rough. So I would love to be able to tell you come bike to city. You would only probably be able to bike downtown, the main area.
Yeah, it would be awesome. When your mayor wants to start a cycling strategy, I would say start with your TikTok movies. Yeah.
Listen, we gotta ask you the question that we always ask. what would be your advice, your page on the mayor's manual? What would be your advice to mayors all around the world? We're here at City Lab Bloomberg.
So mayors, we don't have enough signs. Places like Amsterdam, I was recently in Philadelphia, there's signs everywhere. And although you may think that there aren't enough of that, there are too many. Mm-hmm. There's never too many. There's students in Chicago who attend schools named after people that they know nothing about. And if you put a sign outside the school that says that Irvin Mollison was an African-American who was an attorney, and he was one of the first to win a case to reverse restrictive racial covenants, I think kids would appreciate going to a school named after him. And that's a small thing that mayors can do for their schools that will lift up the space, because you get a bigger sense of alumni pride.
Right.
And I went to Morrison, to Irvin Mollison, too. You know, he was a lawyer. Maybe I can be an attorney. He fought for housing rights. Maybe I could fight for civil rights. And then competition doesn't always need to be negative, right? If I know who your school is named after and I know who my school is named after, maybe my guy is better than you and I'm talking about it, right? But it's still going to lift up pride.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to know you're standing on the shoulders of giants, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's it about pride, isn't it? About getting pride for your city and where you live, in your street, in your neighborhood, and feeling involved.
My dad would, he was like vice president of the block club, and he would tell them sometimes the neighbors would complain about the other neighbor's grass. And he said, complaining about his grass ain't gonna make them do anything about it. So what you should do is make your grass the best you can. And then that's going to make him look at your grass and say, yeah, I better do something with my grass.
And exactly
right. That's what I'm trying to do with my city, right? I'm trying to get us to do something about our grass.
And aren't your TikToks like digital signs?
Yes, I think so. I think that, you know, 1,000 years from now when the aliens come, our Facebook statuses, our Instagram videos, that's going to be our version of the written record.
Yeah.
And who we are. And so I hope my TikToks represent what I think Chicago is.
Your TikToks will be the new map of Chicago. And it's funny that you mentioned, because it starts with stories. Did you know that Amsterdam was nothing on the medieval map? Because you had only cities with a story related to, well, the Catholic Church. And Amsterdam was nothing until the magical event happened. And that was when a woman or a man was dying, he throws up. And the maid tried to burn the thrown up hostel.
Yeah, the vomit.
And it didn't burn. And then it was, well, she burned it again and again. And then it wasn't burned. And it was the miracle of Amsterdam. Amsterdam was put on the medieval map. And then it became a more famous city. So it starts with stories, small stories, and sometimes dirty stories.
Yeah, we start. Chicago is a city that starts with a story too. The a Frenchman impregnated a enslaved Haitian, and when the Haiti Revolution started, she passed away. And that white Frenchman went to Haiti to retrieve his son. He raised that son on a pirate ship, and their pirate ship crash landed in New Orleans. But because he was raised on a pirate ship, John Baptiste Point du Sable, a half black, half Frenchman, I could speak all these languages, right? Because on a pirate ship, you need to be able to speak. And so when he arrived in America, they at first thought that he was a runaway enslaved person. But because he cursed everybody out in French and English and Spanish and Portuguese, they realized he wasn't. And that story traveled up to Peoria, Illinois, and Chief Pontiac, who was the chief of the Potawatomi Indians, decided that his niece needed to marry the guy from that story. So they got married and they moved to the Portage of Chicago and they founded our city, right?
Wow. Can you have a better story than that? It's much better.
Is that your favorite story, Dilla?
No, actually. My favorite stories are the stories of triumph out of discrimination, right? I love telling the Italian beef story. Italian beef is a sandwich that originates from Chicago, and it comes to be about the 1920s. And during that time, the Italians were the last arriving immigrants to Chicago, or the latest, I should say, arriving immigrants to Chicago. Chicago about 1913, you know, pre-World War One. And what happened was they were discriminated against. And so when they would walk in the butcher shops, right, the Protestant Yankees wouldn't sell them sirloins. They wouldn't sell them T-bones, but they would sell them the rump roast. And out of that, though, they decided to just slow cook it, right? Because you can't sear it like you would do a T-bone. It wouldn't be any good. But the Italian grandmas would just cook it for 8 hours. And when their husbands got home, it would be really tender, and they could cut it thin. And, you know, back then we all had more kids, and so they would have to slice it really thin so that everyone can get some. But they would always save some for the sandwich for the husband to take to work the next day. And I guess even when we grow up, we still trade lunches, because his Italian sandwiches got so popular that he quit his job and just started selling the sandwiches outside of the factory. Today, that store is called Al's Italian Beef. They're worldwide. They're everywhere across the country, that sandwich. But it comes from a place of discrimination and pushing past it, right? Like, okay. Right. And that same thing is so many cuisine. Rib tips is a cuisine invented by African Americans. We all take things home from work, right? You know, you take a pen or paper. And so the black butchers were not allowed to take full slabs of ribs. They could only take the scraps, which were the rib tips left after you cut the slabs of ribs. But what did those black brothers do? They took it home and seasoned it to death, right? Put every kind of sauce on it. And now when you come to America, you don't order a full slab. You order rib tips and a hot link. That's the way you order it, right? That's, again, a triumph out of discrimination. I love telling those stories, the stories of us winning despite us.
Wow. I mean, I get hungry just listening to this. Listen, we could listen to those stories forever, but where can we find your TikTok channel? Yeah,
so I'm on all platforms at Six Figure Dilla, the number 6, FIGGA underscore DILLA. Six Figure is just, you know, an urban way of saying six figure. And I picked that because less than 20% of African-American males in Chicago make $100,000 a year. And as a area operator, a union employee, I make $100,000 a year. And so it's also to just let the kids know, right? Like, you can attain success without the traditional roles, right? You don't got to get a lot of student loans. Yeah. Just pursue your passions and you could be successful.
I love it. There is even a story behind the name of the TikTok channel, yeah. Right?
Thank you so much for
thank
being
you.
With
thank
us.
You.
Yeah, great inspiration. Yeah.
Thank
thanks.
You.
Thanks. Yeah.